This is Aviator Cast, episode 21, where we're getting serious about Cirrus.
Calling all aviators, pilots, and aviation lovers. Welcome to Aviator Cast, where we close the gap between real aviation and flight simulation. Climb aboard, buckle up, and prepare for takeoff. Here's your host, Chris Palmer.
Welcome, 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 aviators. You've landed at Aviator Cast. My name is Chris Palmer. I just love all things flying. Lock me in a dark room with a simulator and I'll have a complete blast. Or throw me in the cockpit of a real airplane and I'll be at the peak of my existence doing what I was born to do. I'm the founder and owner of Angle of Attack, a flight simulation training company, which is bringing you this podcast today. Aviator Cast is a weekly podcast where we talk about the spirit of the aviator. We believe flying is an art form, one that we have to continually practice and master. This mastery is gained through a focus on continual learning, human factors, humility, and a commitment to excellence. Each episode of Aviator Cast will have real flight training and flight simulation topics, or an interview with an inspirational and influential aviator. Our desire and mission is not only to create awesome aviators, but also bridge the gap between real aviation and flight simulation. Show notes, transcript, community discussion, and links for this episode can be found by simply going to aviatorcast.com. So thank you for joining us on this, the 21st episode of Aviator Cast. It is an absolute honor and pleasure to have you here with us to join with us in this passion for flying things. One of the best ways that all of you reach out to us is through reviews on iTunes. And we have another one for you today, all the way from the United Kingdom. This comes from someone named Bar Sweat. He says, "Cheers from across the pond, 5 stars. Spent the morning listening to your podcasts, followed by the afternoon, followed by the evening. Stopped flying 6 years ago, but you have relit that spark. Your enthusiasm is compelling. That's it. I'm going back up to bother those clouds. Can't thank you enough." Thank you, Bar Sweat, for the great, great review there. It is our pleasure. We love doing these episodes. We love bringing you great inspirational messages and content and just kind of, again, like you said, relighting that spark, that is definitely one of the things that we do here with Aviator Cast. And not only relighting, but keeping that spark alive and keeping that engine running and always reaching for the next step in your aviator career, in your progression. So today we have an absolutely fantastic episode. This was a really great and fun episode to record. We have Ivy McIver with us. Ivy works for Cirrus Aircraft. She's located in Seattle, and I recently met her at a local aviation show, and she is definitely passionate about aviation, just like the rest of us. And so I want to get right into this with Ivy, and so here it is, Ivy McIver on Hangar Talk with Aviator Cast.
Now, a special Hangar Talk segment.
All right, everybody. We are here with Ivy McIver. How are you doing, Ivy?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, Chris.
Yeah, total pleasure. You and I met about a month ago. You came up to Alaska for the Great Alaska Aviation Gathering, which was the first of that event that I've been to. And you had traveled all the way up from Seattle, as I understand, in one of your brand new Cirrus SR22 turbo airplanes, if I got all that correct, from indeed. Seattle. So
indeed, that's correct. So I am based in Seattle, Washington at Boeing Field, and that's where I hangar a brand new, beautiful 2014 SR22T. And I was fortunate enough to be able to fly that up to Anchorage with just one stop in Sitka and had it on display at the Great Alaskan Aviation Gathering.
Yeah, and you were kind enough to take me in the cockpit and we kind of talked about the design and the ideas behind the design. And I think that big D word for Cirrus is definitely something they take serious. Not only in the sense of the sheer beauty of it, but also with the usability of how intuitive the Cirrus cockpits are. So thank you, if I didn't already say that, for taking me through the airplane and showing me all that. But, you know, you and I kind of hit it off, and I thought you'd be a fantastic guest here on Aviator Cast. So it's great to have you here finally.
Well, thanks. It was my pleasure to give you a tour of the aircraft, and you really hit the nail on the head. The design of the Cirrus, the entire airplane as well as the cabin, was very thoughtful. Just little things like making the windows large and including a rear window to let more light into the cabin, the placement of the seating, the placement of the console between the two front seats. It was all very well thought out design to maximize the comfort of both the pilot and the passengers, and really make it an inviting place to be. So many folks who are unfamiliar with aviation, they think of general aviation and a general aviation aircraft as whatever they see as they drive by an airport. And usually what's outside sitting on the ramp of an airport is something old or something that doesn't look well maintained. Maybe there's some grass growing up around the half inflated tires.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't seem like something that people view as a viable transportation option or something safe to do. Cirrus really wanted to turn that on its head and make it very familiar. So we get a comment a lot that says, this is very car-like. It feels very car-like.
Yeah.
Everyone's very familiar with hopping in their car and driving down the road. If we can make the experience feel more familiar, it doesn't seem as scary. People are more willing to try it out, and we expand the amount of people that are utilizing aviation.
Definitely. It'll be great to get into a deeper conversation on that as we kind of go through this episode, because, you know, there's a lot of unique aspects to Cirrus that I really like, and design is one of them. I'm a person that really appreciates beautiful design. I am a total Apple geek, if that's just one indicator on design and how much I love it. Not that says too much about me, but anyway, first question I always ask a guest, and I think this is very telling, is how did you fall in love with aviation? So go ahead and tell us that.
Okay, here is my embarrassing but true story to live in perpetuity on the internet. Deep breath. When I was a little girl, I saw Top Gun, and
nice.
I don't have any aviation in my family. I didn't grow up in an aviation family or, you know, have someone in my family who was a pilot or have access to an airplane, but I saw Top Gun and thought that was the coolest thing in the world. All I wanted to do was be a fighter pilot. I just wanted to fly fighters off of an air carrier, and I just thought, like, that's it. I know what I want to do. And I was singularly focused. I looked into applying to the Naval Academy and the Air Force Academy, and I joined the Naval Sea Cadet Corps when I was 11 or 12, or, you know, the whole deal, wore my Navy uniform and went to boot camp and all this stuff.
Jeez.
And started going through the process of applying to the academies, and realized that to be a fighter pilot, there are size requirements. So a lot of people are on the upper end of that. You know, I'm too tall to be a fighter pilot.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Cruise isn't that tall. but he's also taller than me. So what I realized that you need to be 5'4" to be a fighter pilot. I don't know if that's changed, but at the time that was the case, and I am not. I stand a statuesque 5'2" tall. So that was that. My world was thrown into a tailspin. So I went on to pursue an aeronautical engineering degree, which ended up turning into a computer science degree. And I got a computer science job. But always in the back of my head was, how can I figure out how to fly and how to make flying my career?
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as I moved to Chicago, I settled into my programming job at a bank. And I drove out to the airport and found a flight instructor and just said, all right, well, I guess I'll just learn how to fly. And started flying in a Piper Archer, and took it from there. I went very quickly through my private and my instrument training because I was again, singularly focused on trying to figure out a flying career, which was at the time, okay, I can't be a fighter pilot, but I'm going to be an airline pilot. Mm-hmm. You know, then life happened and work happened, and I just ended up flying for fun. And then in 2006, I crossed paths with Cirrus. And I've been with Cirrus ever since. So I've been fortunate enough to finally find a flying career that works for me.
Great. So how did that crossing of paths work with Cirrus? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I was very fortunate to be out at the airport in Chicago having a chit-chat with a guy that was out there for the same reason I was. We both had our... We both had our private and instrument rating, and we were both working on our commercial ratings because we were going to get our instructor ratings to share aviation with people on the weekends. He was a software guy. I was a software person. And, we just wanted to do some aviation stuff on the weekends. And he came to the airport one day and said, I'm going to sell airplanes. And I thought, well, that sounds interesting. Good for you. Like, have a great time. And a couple weeks later, I said, hey, how'd that airplane sales thing happen? Go, you know, what happened? And he said, I've been talking to Cirrus, and it's a really cool company. And unfortunately, I don't think I'm going to be able to pursue the opportunity, but you should. And I kind of said, well, I don't know, that sounds a little crazy, but, you know, I'm never one to ignore opportunity.
Right.
It never hurts to have a conversation.
Yeah.
So I said, you know, sure, introduce me to the person you've been talking at Cirrus. I'd love to have a conversation. And one conversation led to another conversation, led to an in-person interview and a flight test. And a few weeks later, I packed up my apartment in Chicago and threw the contents into a storage locker and headed to Duluth, Minnesota.
Wow. Cool.
Yes.
Great story. So how old were you when you kind of started that process?
Well, let's see. I was 30.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great. And, so you've been...
So doing the math, I've been here for 8 years.
Great. So cool. So tell us a little bit more about Cirrus just as a company and a culture and what it's like to work there, and maybe even kind of an introduction to the types of things that you get to do as a Cirrus saleswoman. I know for one, you handed me this clip from, I believe it was AOPA Pilot Magazine.
Yes.
Of you flying up through the Inside Passage in Alaska, and you were the actual pilot of the plane that was being photographed, and you had all these amazing photos. So you don't only get to sell these amazing airplanes and kind of be entrenched in this process, but you also get to do some other things. So kind of share that with us as a whole. I know that's a lot to kind of load on you there, but give it a go.
Well, Cirrus is a really unique company for a lot of reasons. One thing that attracted me to Cirrus in the first place is the entrepreneurial and startup feel of Cirrus. Cirrus, I came from a software world. I worked at two different startup companies where the founders of the companies were still involved in the day-to-day activities, and it felt very... just very small and family-like, and the executive team was always open to ideas from the masses, and it just really seemed like everyone was in it together.
Great.
Cirrus feels a lot that same way. Cirrus was founded by Alan and Dale Klapmeyer in a barn in Baraboo, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Recently, we had an event at Microsoft, and I sort of compared the starting of Cirrus to the starting of Microsoft. You know, the barn in Baraboo, Wisconsin is very much akin to the computer company started in a garage. You know, you hear that story a lot. Cirrus is the aviation startup. You know, everyone told the Klapmeyers there's no way they'd be able to make this work. They were crazy for building a plane with a parachute. They were crazy for making a clean sheet design to put into production in the late 90s. It just, you know, who are you?
Yeah.
Cirrus continues to innovate. Dale continues to be involved in the day-to-day operations of the company. Everyone at the company is really encouraged to fly, to live the Cirrus life, to be involved with a lot of different things, from marketing campaigns to ideas around setting up events like Oshkosh to different methods of training and what's going to resonate with customers. It's just a really sort of open and welcome environment where feedback is encouraged. And all of the sales representatives work directly for the factory or for corporate. So we don't sell new planes through dealers, and that gives us a lot of control and also a lot of leeway into selling a different way. I really think that when we sell a plane to a customer, we welcome them into the Cirrus family, and we're able to do that because we're all part of the Cirrus family ourselves. And it sounds a little hokey, but it's actually sort of true. It's just a really interesting environment to be in. It's so completely different to other aircraft sales reps that I know. We also have the benefit of having a plane. So when a prospect calls Cirrus and says, I'd like to look at a plane, but I've never flown one before. I had this conversation 5 minutes before I got on the phone with you. A gentleman in Idaho said, I looked at a Cirrus about 8 years ago, and I'm really close to deciding that I want to buy one, but I haven't flown one. And I said, yeah, I can fly over to you on Thursday or Monday. And great, that doesn't happen with other aircraft companies. If you call another aircraft company and say you'd like to fly the plane, you know, it might not be for 3 or 4 weeks, and you might have to go to the location of that plane. So we have a lot of flexibility, and we're very encouraged to bring the plane and show it off to not only prospects, but people who are involved in aviation. And so we're encouraged to, take kids up for flights, take line personnel up for flights, take other manufacturers up for flights, just to show people the Cirrus and what it's capable of. It's incredibly unique to be able to have the keys to a beautiful brand new airplane and be told, fly it as much as you can, put as many people in it as you can, and show as many people as possible what the plane can do and give them the actual experience of flying in the plane.
That's cool. I really like that. Cool. Lots of little bits of culture there that are definitely unique in the industry. And I think it shows just in terms of, even if you look at the business of Cirrus and how it's grown over the years and to where they are today, where they're going to be introducing kind of their first jet to the market here soon. When is that going to be, by the way?
Yes. So we will be in production with the SF-50 Vision Jet in the later half of 2015. So we're just over a year away. We have two aircraft flying now. We have a prototype that we call V1. That's been flying for a couple of years now. We've got about 700 hours on that aircraft, and that was a proof of concept.
Right.
We also now have what we term C0, or the first conforming prototype flying. And that aircraft was built entirely with production tooling on the production line.
Cool.
That's established at Duluth, Minnesota, and also in Grand Forks. That's where we actually lay up the carbon fiber parts.
Okay.
So the conforming prototype is flying now. And the second conforming prototype is on the production line, due to fly later this year. So we're very, very close, to getting that plane certified. We have, a staff of people, working exclusively on that jet. We have funding to bring the jet through certification and production. And I have been fortunate enough to fly V1. So the prototype, the proof of concept jet.
Great.
And, it was amazing and unremarkable. And I say that because it's a truly amazing, clean sheet, simple, beautiful design, very Cirrus-esque. But it is not very dissimilar to the plane I fly every day. The flight deck is similar. The handling characteristics are similar. The approach speeds are similar. And so when I came back from that flight, I was really able to speak with my customers and my owners with complete confidence that, yes, you are going to be able to move directly from your 22T into the SF-50 and be able to fly it.
Right. Great. Well, that's a pretty unique experience. That's cool that you were able to fly it.
It was awesome.
So tell us, this is kind of a question that kind of rolls into our next topic here, but tell us, how Cirrus, and you've already touched on it a little bit, but how Cirrus aircraft separate themselves from the competition. So obviously, you know, I suppose the competition for the SR-22T would be something like the Corvallis from Cessna or the Bonanza from now Cessna, kind of. So tell us how it compares kind of in its market, and really maybe even the different markets it competes with, even initial trainers or advanced kind of everyday flying aircraft. So tell us what sets you guys apart, basically.
Well, I think it's a lot of things. And I can't point to one specific thing that will trump everything else. You know, some people look at the parachute or the Cirrus airframe parachute system, CAPS, as the end-all, be-all, set aside, this is what makes Cirrus different. But I really think it's a combination of things that makes Cirrus unique and is the it's the combination of those things that make the Cirrus the best-selling single-engine piston in the industry. We've had that title for 13 years, which is pretty amazing for an aircraft company that's only been in production for 15 years.
Yeah.
You know, you're looking at comparing market share. We actually have the biggest market share in the industry, bigger than Cessna, bigger than Piper. So, I mean, it's been a tremendous journey for Cirrus Aircraft. We've been very fortunate to have the, you know, the people at Cirrus really make the company, obviously, just the sort of innovative spirits and the drive to keep innovating. And I think that's one thing that you can point to that continues to drive Cirrus sales. So we don't, if you go and look at some of the other aircrafts that you mentioned, the airframe itself is exactly the same as it was 10, 20, 40, 50 years ago.
Yeah.
If you look at a 2014 Cirrus, it's completely different from a 2004 Cirrus. Mm-hmm. It's got different gear. It's got a different wing spar. It's got a different engine. It's got a different avionics panel. It's got a different interior. It's got different lighting. I mean, it's completely different. The fuselage is the same shape. And it still has a parachute. That's pretty much, you know, where the similarities stop.
Right.
So when you look at things like, it was certified under different parameters, right? So much more stringent parameters for the certification. We were certified in 99. That required us to have a 26G seat, for instance, and a 3G roll cage. So much more higher qualities of safety.
Mm-hmm.
It also is comfortable to be in. We talked a little bit about the design of that and making it car-like. It's easy to get in and out of. When you open the gull wing door and you get into the back seat, you just step down onto the back seat floor and sit. And then when you get out, you just stand up. There's no crawling in head first or, you know, crawling around the seat. You know, we really strive to make it a comfortable and quiet and nice place to be. And then the creature comforts within the Cirrus, things like cup holders, and all of the seats recline, and there's a console in between so you're not shoulder to shoulder with the person in the left seat, the person in the right seat. XM radio, just like in your car. So there's a lot of little creature comforts like that. And then, of course, there's the Cirrus airframe parachute system. And I really feel like that is something that isn't just unique. It creates so much peace of mind for someone who's not an aviator. It creates so much peace of mind for someone that is an aviator and flies over hostile terrain, like Alaska.
Right.
If there was an engine failure between Yakutat and Anchorage, there's really not a lot of options for me.
Right, exactly.
But I have a parachute, so I have the ultimate option. You know, between Anchorage and Fairbanks, there's certainly, you know, there's not a lot of great options. Even down in the lower 48, if you're looking at a lot of the terrain I fly over, going from Spokane to Missoula or, you know, Idaho Falls to Bozeman. I mean, there's really...
gets pretty rough.
There's not a lot of places that could put it down. You know, the other thing for me with the parachute is my husband is not a pilot. And mm-hmm. so if something were to happen to me, I'm a fairly fit individual, but you know, anything can happen. If something happened to me, I know I'm not going to strand him in the sky. Same is true. My mom loves to fly with me. And I feel very confident that if something were to happen to me, she wouldn't be stranded. She has an option, and a way to get down. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's the combination of all of that for the airplane. There's also the portion of the company and the other owners. So we have a very, very active owner community, and there's a lot of Cirrus out there. So there's always fellow pilots to talk to and fellow Cirrus aviators to go do stuff with. So there's fly-ins and Cirrus pilot proficiency programs and decision-making seminars, and we have a migration every year we will get 300 or 400 airplanes flying in to this year. It's in Las Vegas in October in conjunction wow. with the Red Bull Air Race. And we'll get hundreds of Cirrus owners flying their planes from all over the country. I just talked to an owner in Pennsylvania who will be flying his plane to Las Vegas for the migration. Cool. And you have this camaraderie that you don't necessarily have with an aircraft that's only producing a handful of airplanes a year. Mm-hmm. You know, we're producing 300 airplanes a year.
Right. And you guys are focused on a specific model too, and your focus isn't spread out between business jets and light trainers and kind of the market that you're in and twin engine and all, you know, the focus can get really spread out, which is also a problem too.
Yeah. And then say, you know, some aircraft get sort of left behind. I feel like the Cirrus is the best bang for your buck out there. Full stop. It is a ridiculously capable airplane with the turbo, being able to go up to 25,000 feet, mm-hmm. being able to fly through known ice conditions, and being able to fly fast. It'll go in excess of 210 knots when you're up in the flight levels, mm-hmm. but it's also very, very docile to handle in slow flying situations. So it's a plane that you can purchase, learn to fly in, get comfortable in, and grow into.
Great. So tell us a little bit more about, because we talked about kind of the ancillary aspects of the Cirrus design. From a pilot's perspective, lay it down. What are the great, great features of me as a pilot jumping into the airplane? How is the airplane going to help me as far as avionics? You already mentioned Ficke, which is important. You can explain that a little more. The turbo, those sorts of things. So as a pilot, what are the big aspects that really help out?
So I'm going to start with walking up to the plane.
Okay.
Because as a pilot, I walk up to this plane and it is a dead sexy machine. I walk up to this plane and I'm like, I'm going to get in that thing. And that is super cool. I mean, you just feel cool walking up to the plane. It's an incredibly beautiful machine. And you feel proud to fly it, you know? So you get in, it's easy to get in. It's very easy to pre-flight. Very straightforward machine, not a lot of complications. So, you know, it's fixed gear. Which is very, very simple. Fixed gear, single engine plane, very simple. Mm-hmm. The next thing I think about that comes to mind is the redundancy. I'm extremely confident when I get into the plane that even if bad things happen, and I think as a pilot, that has to be a focus of the what if. You know, you've got to be prepared for bad things happening, mm-hmm. no matter what you're flying. So I know that the plane has a ton of redundancy. I have 2 air data computers, 2 AHAR systems, 2 separate electrical systems, 2 alternators, 2 batteries, screen redundancy. And then the ultimate redundancy of the parachute.
Right.
So I feel extremely confident that I can get into the plane, and even if stuff starts to go bad, I have a lot of options to either make it right or get someplace where I can make it right. Mm-hmm. I fly a lot of IFR or in a lot of IFR conditions, being in Seattle and covering the coast of Western Canada and up into Alaska. Mm-hmm. So the synthetic vision is an incredibly capable and well thought out way to present information. Mm-hmm. So with the synthetic vision, I can see what the terrain would look like if I could see it out the window. I can see the runway. I can see a path in the sky that represents what my flight path will be for an approach, say, or for a hold, or for my flight plan to wherever I'm going. Mm-hmm. I can see terrain, water. I can see other traffic. It just gives me incredible spatial awareness, even if I can't see out the window. And then on the MFD, I have all of the information about what's going on up front. So I can see, to a very detailed degree what the engine's doing, what the engine temperatures are, you know, how much fuel I've got, how much, anti-ice fluid I have, how, you know, so I have the confidence that I know what the plane's doing.
Right.
While it's doing it. And then the avionics system is just extremely well laid out. So it's very easy to reach all the buttons that I need to reach. Mm-hmm. It's a straightforward process to access the information I need. And by information I need, it's everything from what's the altimeter setting to what's the approach look like at the airport where I'm going, load the approach right into the avionics, have that all detailed in my flight plan. I can see information about the airport itself. Is there a restaurant on the field? You know, what's the frequency for Unicom? What's the frequency for ATIS? I can also see all the weather. So I can see cloud tops and air mets and SIGMETs and icing potential, radar. It's a very comprehensive weather product that comes from XM, as well as pilot reports. So I can continually assess the level of risk or level of intensity of what I have in front of me between my present position and my destination airport.
And you guys, didn't Cirrus actually spearhead the Garmin perspective? So they were the first to add the numpad, if you will, the FMS pad. Is that right? Or am I mistaken there?
Right. So the Cirrus perspective by Garmin was indeed a joint effort. And part of the reason why we partnered with Garmin was because Garmin was very open to our suggestions of making it fit better for our pilots and our airframe. So rather than take the G1000 and put it in the Cirrus as our flight deck, there was some things that we wanted to do differently, and Garmin was very open to our feedback and changing the avionics so they were Cirrus-ized, if you will.
Yeah,
and that's what the perspective came.
And it's almost a standard now. You know, if you're going to have a really nicely laid out flight deck with the G1000, you're going to have that numpad. And I don't know if you guys did the level thing too. Maybe that was just a Garmin thing, but
That was also unique to Cirrus when it first came out. What's really nice to see, and this is another reason why I think Cirrus is a great company, is that we created a lot of things, brainstormed a lot of things, and innovated several different features within the avionics that were Cirrus specific, but that we worked with Garmin to enable those features to be shared with other flight decks. So, you know, we didn't just create them for Cirrus. We created them and then said to Garmin, hey, if you want to take some of these features and integrate them into future versions of the software, that's great. More access to more safety features is a good thing.
Right, definitely. Yeah, at the end of the day, you know, all the creature comforts, everything is kind of secondary. And as pilots, we worry about what happens up front and what really matters and having the information in our hands. And, you know, on this show, we've talked a whole lot about technically advanced aircraft, which Cirrus obviously falls within that realm, and how that relates to who pilots are and how they train and how they operate from day to day. And, you know, really what we're trying to achieve, and maybe you agree, is we're just trying to achieve more situational awareness, and from that better safety and keeping our families safer and just making the whole situation more manageable. And systems like the Garmin Perspective just really help out tremendously. And, you know, I've had a lot of time in a Bonanza. I haven't had any time in a Cirrus, but I've had a lot of time in a Bonanza, which is really Garmin in a lesser form. And I just found that it helped out quite a bit. But when you and I stepped into the Cirrus in Anchorage, I just realized, you know, there's so many of these tools are so useful to me because I have this pad that I can quickly enter in information, you know, and I don't have to turn a knob and kind of do all the entry that way. And then also the way you turn the MFD toward the pilot just a little bit rather than just a fully flat panel, and all these little just intricate details that as a whole add up to just a much better experience for me as a pilot to manage my flight safely.
Well, that's a very nice compliment. You know, you said something that sort of struck a chord with me with regards to the technically advanced aircraft and the equipment in the airplane. I think it's really, really important, regardless of airplane, to know the equipment in your airplane and know how to use it. And with the Cirrus, there's some unique things like the parachute, like the cap system, and you know, obviously the different layers of the Garmin avionics. Mm-hmm. It's absolutely imperative that you know how to use everything in your airplane, whether it's a J3 Cub with nothing in the panel, or it's a Cirrus with an incredibly capable panel. It's not necessarily looking at the avionics and thinking, well, the avionics will do my job as a pilot for me. All I need to do is just sit back and watch it fly me places. You know, with great power comes great responsibility, right? So if you've got all of this capability, it's your responsibility to know how to use it and use it when necessary. Obviously, like I said before, I fly a lot of IFR. If I'm in real instrument conditions, having the synthetic vision gives me more ability to stay relaxed and monitor everything else that's going on. If I've got autopilot and synthetic vision and the autopilot is flying an approach for me, I have more time to make sure that my scan is comprehensive and to make sure that the wings are ice free, that the ice system is right, working properly, to make sure that my engine temperatures are good, to make sure that my speed is good. You add more tasks to the pilot, the smaller that sort of box gets, or the more saturated your concentration box gets.
Right.
You know, some people kind of look at the panel as a bit complicated, and it does take time and dedication to learn the panel. You know, that's the responsibility of a Cirrus owner. But it also opens up a lot more ability and a lot more things that you can do with the airplanes and places you can fly.
Yeah, I think this segues kind of really nicely into the next question I had, which was, you know, what does Cirrus do as far as initial customer training or recurring training and things like that? And I'll kind of let you go with that. But before that, you know, really one of the challenges that Cirrus and every aircraft manufacturer had in the early 2000s was pilots transitioning to technically advanced aircraft. And suddenly they had, you know, all these whiz-bang features that were thrown into their cockpit without really putting it in context, kind of like you were talking about. You know, having it there as almost a co-pilot to help you, not do it for you or fill some gap that you had in your training, but rather be there as a guide sort of thing. So talk to us a little bit about Cirrus's answer to that problem, because I think, again, it's one of those things that Cirrus has innovated in that they've had this initial customer training, and it was really, as far as I understand, it was the only company that actually did that. So tell us about that.
Yep. So great question. There's a lot of pieces to that. So when the Cirrus was first introduced in the late 90s and early 2000s, we did not have a great accident rate. When we were compared to the, if you're just looking at fatal accidents, we were well above the GA average. When you look deeper into accident statistics, most accidents will happen when there's low time and type. Time and type is a big accident preventer. The more time and type you have, the less likely you are to be in a fatal accident in that aircraft. So when the Cirrus was introduced, everyone was time and was low time and type.
Gotcha.
And so that was a big challenge for us to overcome. The other big challenge is it looks and smells like the same single engine piston airplane that everyone has been using for training. But the capabilities are much bigger. So people were using it different. So when you look at other single engine piston aircraft, you're looking at much at the time at the, in the, you know, kind of late 90s, early 2000s, you're looking at aircraft that were mostly used in training environments. Mm-hmm. There was an instructor on board. You weren't going very far. Mm-hmm. You weren't going in terribly bad weather. And if you were going in bad weather, you weren't traversing multiple weather systems. Mm-hmm. So the Cirrus came on the scene and people started using it differently because it was more capable. It was fast and it was comfortable. And, you know, all of a sudden you could get into the Cirrus and your family would go with you and you could fly to your cabin three states away or to go visit your kids in college four states away.
Right.
And so people were not only low time and type, but also using the plane for a much different mission. And that contributed to a higher fatal accident rate. We have had a couple of iterations in how we do customer training. When we first started manufacturing the plane, the customer training consisted of handing the keys over and asking the customer to give us a call when he got home.
Yeah.
That evolved to doing a transition training course that took a customer through a basic maneuver. Hey, can you land the thing? Okay, you're good. And we actually contracted that out to a third party. So we didn't do that. And if you look at our kind of fatal accident rate, it started to it spiked in 2006.
Okay.
And at that point, we completely revamped how we looked at training. We're always evaluating our accident rate and looking at the causes of accidents to try to figure out how to prevent them.
Great.
Sometimes that solution is put different stuff in the airplane. Mm-hmm. Case in point, the level button. Why not put a capability where if you become spatially unaware or disoriented, why not have a one button that you can push that just settles everything? It rolls the wings level and engages the autopilot. It's a great tool. We also incorporated something called electronic stability protection, which just sits in the background and utilizes the autopilot servos such that if you go out of a normal flight envelope, you bank steeper than 45 degrees or pitch up or down with an excessive pitch, the servos kick in and actually give you active feedback to shallow out your bank or to shallow out your pitch. That's something that was put in place to try and prevent slow maneuvering accidents. So there's only so much you can put on the plane.
Right.
You know, when you start looking at accident causes, so many of the accident causes are pilot driven, not airplane driven.
As usual, yeah.
And so not only are we focusing on innovations in the aircraft, but we're focusing on innovations with training. So in 2006, we looked at that accident rate. In 2007, we changed the way we did training. We brought it in-house. It became a much more standardized and more strict process. And all of our customers have a three-day scenario-based transition training program included with the delivery of their airplane.
Great.
This is something that we feel extremely strongly about. That transition training consists of a curriculum that involves both flight training and ground school, and then is augmented by simulator training. As we talked about a little bit earlier, there are systems in the plane that cannot be trained or flown in the real airplane.
Right.
And so a lot of our transition training is focused not only on basic maneuvers of landing and takeoff and stalls and slow flight, but also scenario-based decisions. You know, what happened? How are you going to divert the airplane if the weather, like, let's lay out something really basic. The weather went IFR and you're a VFR only pilot. What are you going to do?
Right.
And then it gets in a little bit more in depth and a little bit more in depth to the point where we start putting pilots into the simulator and start talking about CAPS. CAPS is something that we brief before every flight just to remind everyone in the plane, including the pilot, that it's there and how to use it.
And that's your parachute system, just to clarify for the listeners.
Yes, yes, exactly. So CAPS is the Cirrus Airframe Parachute System. With the simulator, we can take that a step further and simulate the decision-making process, because the act of pulling the parachute itself is very simple. It's just as simple as plugging in a flight plan or, you know, engaging the autopilot. It's a very simple process. All of the things that lead up to that CAPS pull, that's where the training needs to happen. It's the scenarios of evolving your decision making to include the decision to pull CAPS. The execution of pulling the handle is really, it's not difficult.
Right.
So in the simulator, we can put different scenarios together. And typically, especially in people who are transitioning from another aircraft, they will try and fly the plane into the ground. We will put them in absolutely no-win situations. There is no possible way that you can get out of this bad situation. And they will drive the plane into the ground. And that's an integral part of our transition training, is to put them through that process, make them realize that you do have an option of the Cirrus parachute, and then kind of help that decision-making process evolve to including the parachute pull as an option. Again, it's about knowing the equipment in your airplane. So, you know, from an accident standpoint, after that revamp of the training, we saw the accident rate decline. Now, or the fatal accident rate decline. Still, we saw that it was slightly higher than the general aviation fatal accident rate. We had another spike in our fatal accident rate in 2011.
Okay.
It was actually a terrible year for us. We had 16 fatal accidents and 3 CAPS pulls. Very small amount of CAPS pulls, very large amount of fatal accidents.
Yeah.
And again, we reworked our training. And that is where our current training philosophy of Cirrus Approach came about. Cirrus Approach is a comprehensive and ongoing training program that we have rolled out to not only our new owners, but all of our owners. And this concentrates on initial transition, scenario-based transition training, and also incentivizes pilots to actually seek ongoing training and recurrent training. So a 6-month training event, a year training event. And there are learning tools online that help the pilot go through that, as well as keep track of their progress. And then there's incentives based around that. So it's almost like a rewards-based system, where the more training you do and the more recurrent you are, or the more current you are, the more you're rewarded in different aspects. So that's something that we're really focused on, is not just let's do 3 days of scenario-based transition training when you pick up your airplane, and when you leave, we hope you enjoy ownership.
Yeah.
It's really incorporating our training network and our factory pilots and our owners to focus on the importance of recurrent training and to keep themselves updated. Now, we work with our training partner network in sort of two respects. We have Cirrus Standardized Instructor Pilots, or CSIPs, and then we have Cirrus Training Centers. And all of those partners are held to very high standards. They need to do recurrent training with us on a yearly basis. We have a team of folks at our corporate headquarters in Duluth whose sole mission is to keep our partners standardized and up to date and well informed about the latest training techniques. So what we have seen is an incredible drop in our fatal accident rates, such that since 2012, we've been below the fatal accident rate for all of GA. Great. And for 2014 year to date, we're actually well below. So the GA rate really sort of hovers right around 1.2, 1.3. Mm-hmm. That's right about where it is. In 2012, our fatal accident rate was 1.14.
Okay.
In 2013, it was 1.01. And in 2014, it's actually just 0.44.
Wow.
So we have had to date one fatal accident, and we're almost halfway through the year.
Well,
what's interesting about what? Yes, exactly. What's very interesting about that is thus far in 2014, obviously, our fleet is as big as it's ever been. We have 5,600 right. Cirrus aircraft out there. We have had the biggest number of caps pulls ever in mm-hmm. a year. In 2013, we had 7 caps pulls. Year to date, 2014, we've had 7 caps pulls.
Wow.
But we have just one fatality.
Wow. Yeah, I saw one recently, actually, that was in Australia with a salesman there, actually, that was demonstrating the aircraft to some customers, and they pulled the parachute, and everyone was okay.
Right. Everyone walked away from that accident.
Right. Which is just fantastic. I mean, at the end of the day, we all love flying. That's what we want to do, but we also want to come back down to earth in one piece. So,
yeah.
That's really
there
great.
Is actually a video that a bystander took of that
yeah.
parachute pull, which is a really telling demonstration of just what happens
mm-hmm.
because the plane is just brought safely to earth under this giant parachute.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so slow. It sort of gently brings the plane. Now, when I say gentle, obviously there's some force that is exerted, and the plane, you know, hits the ground. It's a pretty heavy plane hitting the ground.
Right.
But seeing it come down under canopy, it's really a gentle ride compared to the alternative.
Yeah. Yeah. It's nothing like being a lawn dart. You can kind of settle in, even if it's pretty bumpy, but yeah.
Yeah.
Great. So, tell us a little bit, because we have a lot of listeners that are into simulation, and one of the things we talk about a lot here on the show is how to use a simulator, even a home-based PC simulator, to augment your training and stay instrument proficient, things like that. Tell us how your simulators at Cirrus play a deeper role into that. You know, you mentioned kind of some details about the simulators you have before we kind of got on the air here. You know, wraparound screens, things like that. Tell our listeners about that, just out of curiosity.
Sure. So we have a network of simulators throughout the world. Some of them are more equipped than others. We have a handful of full motion simulators throughout the world. The simulator that we have at Cirrus Corporate is a Frasca FTD, and the screens are 12 feet high, and it's a 220-degree wraparound screen.
Right.
The cockpit itself is an actual cockpit from the aircraft. So mm-hmm. the seats, the console, the flight deck, the glare shield, it's all exactly what you would find in the airplane. So it's a very real cockpit setup.
Mm-hmm.
And we have the ability to create whatever situations we want to create. It's very realistic in terms of handling characteristics, but also spatial awareness. The simulator is integral into every transition training course that we do, both in training new Cirrus owners, new Cirrus pilots, as well as flight instructors who are becoming Cirrus standardized instructors. There is equipment on our airplane that can't be simulated or can't be trained with in the actual aircraft,
right.
Namely the parachute.
Right.
But we can pull the parachute all day long in the simulator. And as I was sort of saying before, the thing that we most need to focus on in training with regards to the parachute is everything that leads up to that parachute pull. The execution is very straightforward. But getting someone to go through the decision-making process is hard. And so that's where the simulation actually is really key for us and our training. The other place that we use the simulator is for our partner in command course. So we like to put either the non-flying spouse or, you know, someone who's a non-aviator but has someone delivering an airplane in their family. They might not have an interest to learn how to fly, but we want them to know what's going on in the airplane, and we want them to know what to do in case of an emergency or pilot incapacitation. And so we can go into the simulator and teach them how to use the radios. We can teach them how to pull the parachute. All of the execution steps right there in the simulator, even if they're apprehensive of going up flying in the plane, right. We can get them comfortable with that procedure on the ground before they get in the actual aircraft.
Great.
The other thing that simulation, not necessarily the simulator at the factory, but it certainly helps from an avionics perspective. The avionics are very capable but reasonably complex, and mm-hmm. they do take a fair amount of time for someone to master.
Definitely.
And it's much less intimidating and much less stressful to focus on mastering those avionics without the distraction of flying an airplane.
Right.
So you can sit in the simulator and go through all of the avionics flows and all of the emergency procedure flows without leaving the ground. Obviously, it's much more cost effective, but it can be a lot less intimidating.
Cool. Great. Yeah, I think simulators will always be something that augments training, especially in today's world where we're trying to cut costs and just do things in a more cost efficient way. And as you laid out a lot with kind of how Cirrus does it, is the scenarios that you can't really do in the actual aircraft and doing those things that pilots will never see, really. I mean, it really, the odds are that a Cirrus pilot will never have to use the CAP system. But say that they do, they've been through that and they know how to do it. And
yep.
That's just, that can't be replaced. Actually, having that experience of pulling the system, even if it's simulated, it can't be replaced. You can't read that on a checklist. You can't know and understand what it's really like unless you've tried it out.
Yep. And like I said, it's the process before the pull as well.
Right.
So
the decision making.
Being able to put a pilot in a situation that hopefully they'll never get into. Mm-hmm. Or just step by step change things to see what the pilot will do. And let the pilot lead themselves down this path that's not going to lead to a good place and see what happens. Like, do they continue down that path or do they change and find a better solution, right? Do they turn around when they've entered an icing situation or, you know, do they try to change it? Do they alter their course? Do they try to deviate? So we can focus on that and just kind of changing things in the simulator, showing them scenarios that most likely they're never going to see outside, but giving them that experience will reinforce, A, make good decisions to not get into that situation.
Mm-hmm.
B, if something happens and, you know, we've all been there where you'd say you'd never, ever do that when you're sitting on the ground, but one thing leads to another and you find yourself in a bad situation, recognize the bad situation and fix it. And sometimes that bad situation isn't fixable. So pull the parachute.
Right. Yep.
One of our co-founders actually, in the initial discussions of design, he said something that's always resonated with me, which was, the penalty for bad decision-making shouldn't be death necessarily.
Yeah, I like that.
So let's give someone the opportunity to hit the reset button
mm-hmm.
and learn something from it and not do it again.
I like that a lot. That's the best philosophy I've heard so far about it. That's great.
Yeah.
So before the show, you said that one of your specialties was inspiring pilots to get into aviation. So I kind of want to close on that note and kind of get your final thoughts and remarks on those terms and kind of talk to our listeners, not only those that are pilots now that kind of need an extra boost to get through their difficult training, or those that are thinking about getting into it. So let's kind of close out the show that way, and then we'll say goodbye, I guess, at the end.
All right. Well, you know, I feel very fortunate to represent Cirrus Aircraft as a salesperson, but I also feel very passionate about representing aviation in general. I think that there's a lot of people that don't understand aviation. There's a lot of people who really aren't interested in aviation, but might be if it was more accessible. Mm-hmm. So simulation is a great way to make aviation more more accessible, mm-hmm. To people sort of out there. So if you have more simulation, and more places where people can get simulation or more products where people can just say, oh yeah, I'm just going to download this computer simulation and fly on my computer. If more people have access to that, more people might be apt to go out to the airport and explore taking a flying lesson.
Right.
It's a pretty big barrier to entry to ask someone, hey, here's what you need to do to go learn how to fly. You need to drive to the airport. You need to go into a building that you don't know. And inside, you're going to find some strangers who do this thing that seems pretty mystical, and start asking questions that people all know the answers to in this small community, and put yourself out there and risk, you know, potentially not being understood or exposing your lack of understanding, and then figure out how to get into a plane that you don't know anything about.
Yeah.
And figure out for yourself, like, is this a good plane? Is this a bad plane? Is this mm-hmm. a good deal? Is this guy a good guy? Mm-hmm. Figure that all out. I mean, it's a big ask, right? Mm-hmm. And so if we can make aviation just a little bit more welcoming, make it a little bit more accessible, one way is through simulation. Hey, all you got to do is download this and, like, you can kind of check it out. Like, that's pretty
right.
cool.
Totally.
But I also, I feel like I, one of my responsibilities as a pilot is to sort of evangelize for aviation. It's a really, really cool thing. I mean, it's a life-changing
yeah.
thing to become a pilot and have access to a plane. I often tell my acquaintances and friends here in Seattle, when I look at, well, how far is Portland? Portland's 40 minutes to me.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
At a dinner party, Portland's a 3.5-hour drive. Or it's a, you know, it's a flight on Horizon that involves dragging yourself down to SeaTac and parking and going through security. It's a 40-minute deal for me. And,
right.
you know, Vancouver's 40 minutes. Spokane's an hour and 15 minutes. This is how I view the world.
Right.
And that's pretty unique. It's amazing. I tell a lot of stories about how I use the airplane. So I can look at the weather on a Friday afternoon in January and see who got the most snow and Friday after work launch for Sun River, Oregon, land the plane, have the Sun River Lodge come pick me up at the airport and bring me over to the condo. And then in the morning, take the shuttle up to Mount Baker, have an awesome powder day. Come back and fly home Saturday night. That's way better than driving to Crystal. I mean, it's just absolutely incredible, this time machine that
right,
I have.
Yeah.
And it's with the proper decision making as a pilot, it's an incredibly safe pursuit. Very much like riding a motorcycle. You know, it can be seen as risky, but if you make good decisions and evaluate your risks properly, it's very safe. So I feel like it's my responsibility to tell people that. I'm fortunate to have the platform to do that.
Right. Totally.
So, you know, I have a plane that I can fly around and show people, but I'm also very involved in aviation from a non-Cirrus perspective. So from a backcountry, mountain flying perspective, or mm-hmm. from an aviation high school perspective. So I've done some stuff with aviation high school in Seattle, being a mentor for some of the students over at aviation high school. So, you know, there's a lot of different avenues that you can reach out to people to welcome them into the aviation family, as opposed to sort of creating this barrier of entry of it's a cool kid club and like it's pretty closed off and it's hard to do. Granted, you need to be passionate about it to make it happen, because it does require diligence in training and diligence in currency, and money. You know, you need to allocate funds to go and do it safely. But it really can be extremely rewarding. And I feel like if more people knew about the world of aviation, more people would be passionate about figuring out how to make it happen. And I think that's responsibility of every pilot, but especially me as someone in the industry.
Definitely. Well, it sounds like you caught the bug. Sounds like you caught it early, and sounds like you're still pretty sick.
That's true. that's very, very true. I've been at Cirrus for 8.5 years, and I'm living my career dream.
Great. Love to hear it. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. Are you going to be at Oshkosh by chance?
Absolutely.
Great.
I will be there all week. So
I'll come see
you.
You
will be there as well. Stop by. We'll do a little bit more hangar flying, and certainly bring some friends over.
Awesome. Sounds great. Thanks for joining us, Ivy.
Thank you so much, Chris. It's been a pleasure.
Take care. All right, so I don't know about you, but I think that was such a pleasure to have Ivy on the show. You can just tell that she absolutely believes in and just totally loves Cirrus Aircraft. Not only the aircraft itself, which, by the way, is absolutely beautiful. I really couldn't believe their newest version when I was in Anchorage and she showed me. But not only the aircraft itself, but the company culture and what they do as a company and what they represent. Cirrus is always one of those companies to me that has stood out. They've been around for about as long as I have decided to be a pilot. So I decided in about 1999 or the year 2000 that I was going to be a pilot, and that was going to be what I did, and I was going to be part of aviation. It was always something that I really loved, and really Cirrus has been there kind of the whole time, and I've kind of grown up with Cirrus just as Cirrus has grown up. It's amazing to see where they have come and just how incredible those aircraft are, how advanced they are, all the tools that they give us as pilots, all the creature comforts that they give us and our families, and the peace of mind that comes with something like the CAPS system and some of the other systems they have. Just really innovative and forward-thinking company, which I really like to see and I really appreciate. And not only that, but they do really have beautiful airplanes. They just do a great job. And on a personal note, Ivy is a great and wonderful person. If you check out her her social media profiles, which I have shared in the show notes for this episode, you can see, you know, on her Twitter profile, on her Facebook, just how involved in aviation she is and just how much she loves what she's doing and how much she appreciates the opportunity she has and really how much she loves Cirrus as well. So it's plain to see that she absolutely loves what she's doing, and it was such a pleasure to have her on the show. So again, thank you, Ivy, for joining us and for sharing of your passion with the listeners of AviatorCast. We really appreciate you being here, and we hope to catch up with you again in the future. So that's it. We'd love to hear your thoughts. You can truly shape this show, AviatorCast, and the topics we provide. Take a quick 2-minute survey at survey.aviatorcast.com. Do you want to be a part of the AviatorCast community or leave a comment? Go to aviatorcast.com to join in, or write me directly at me@aviatorcast.com. Say you don't want to miss an episode of AviatorCast, which I hope you don't. No worries. You can subscribe through email at aviatorcast.com or iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, or SoundCloud. Lots of different locations. We'd also love to get an honest review from you on iTunes. This is the primary way that others find out about AviatorCast and subscribe and things like that. And that rating really pushes us to the front of different podcasts out there. We think we run a quality show here, and we try to bring quality guests on the show. This is stuff that we don't get paid for. We just want to share this message with anyone and everyone out there that that has this flying bug in them. So if you'd like to check out any of our training products here, Angle of Attack, head to flyaoamedia.com. These are primarily for flight simulator, but they can be used as a means of kind of just getting familiar with aviation. You can start with the basics for free with Aviator 90, learn instrument flying and more with Aviator Pro, or even fly many of the world's most popular jets virtually with our training products for the 737, 747, 777, and MD-11. Again, at flyaoamedia.com. Many thanks also go out to the Angle of Attack crew for all of their hard work to make this episode possible and all they do outside AviatorCast. We have a truly fantastic crew that keeps us running just as a crew does on an airliner or on a ground crew. So these guys are fantastic. They run the show, really, and huge thanks goes to them. And certainly not least, thank you so much for joining us on this episode of AviatorCast. We are truly grateful to have you here, part of our community, and so engaged in this wonderful passion for flying things. Until next time, throttle on!
10-5-8 is ready. 10-5-8 is the short line, turn left, heading 235, maintain 2000, runway 25 right, clear for takeoff.
Clear for takeoff, 25 right, United 580.